Lodge and Hopewell Gardens. Do all the things you wanted to do all summer, all day, all night. Winter, spring, summer, fall. Call 1-800-441-4410 for reservations at Pocono Gardens and beautiful Mount Airy Lodge.
Hello and welcome to FW Presents, the anthology show for the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, Rob Kelly, and this is another installment of Mountain Comics, the show where I take a look back at the comics I bought while on vacation in the Pocono Mountains of Pennsylvania in the 1970s and 1980s. And joining me in the cabin this week is podcaster extraordinaire Gene Hendricks. Hi, Gene.
Hello, fellow New Jerseyan.
Yes, that's right. This is very, it's very exciting. This is Gene and I are about as close to one another that two Skyping people can be, really. Yeah, this is a all Jersey-centric episode. I know many of you are excited about that.
Well, you know they're jealous about this great state we live in and the huge population in such a small area.
That's, yeah, the traffic jams, the high taxes, it's all, yeah. It's all so enviable.
Oh, yeah.
So the book we're here to talk about for this episode of Mountain Comics is Marvel Super Action, number 37, which was on sale in August of 1981. Now, this book was bought, I bought this comic with Gene in person. Now, some of you are probably wondering, how is that possible? Because didn't you just say this was a mountain comic? Did Gene go back in time and visit you in the Pocono Mountains in the 1980s?
Don't tell them that.
No, I will say the answer to that is no. That would be an amazing episode, though, if that was the case. Basically, how I have these mountain comics kind of is in four different ways. One is just some of them are the original comics that I still have from buying off the newsstand back in the 70s and 80s. Some are ones that I remembered having and then have rebought over time. And then a third set was when I used Mike's Amazing World, using that amazing site, using that awesome newsstand feature that they have where you can put up a date and it'll show you all the comics on sale at that date. So I will do that for August of whatever year comics, and I'll look at the covers. And some of them will strike a chord with me and I'll go, I had that one. I know I had that one because I'll just remember the cover. And then I'll go and track it down. Then there's a fourth group that somehow even missed that level of scrutiny. And last year when Gene and I got together, we went and had lunch, and then we went to a comic book store. We were going through the back issue box. Gene was looking for Quasar and Marvel Boy appearances.
Because, I'm that weird.
Right. Well, I'm the Aquaman shrine. Who am I to say? And then I saw this comic, and the cover immediately lodged itself in my brain as, like, this is one of these comics. This is a mountain comic. I can't believe I missed it even through Mike's Amazing World. And it was. This was one of the ones that I bought. So it was just total random happenstance that I happened to see it and this comic store had it. And I think I even showed it to you, Gene, at the moment. I think I was like, Gene, this was like a mountain comic. I was just so excited. It was so cool to have somebody with me that I could show it to.
I remember that because I, in my head, I'm like, wait, doesn't he know all his mountain comics? I've had instances like that myself because I've gone through periods of getting comics, then getting rid of comics, then getting comics, and so I have some images in my head of comics I used to own. Right. But then every now and again, I'll come across one as like, I remember that cover, but it was not on the top of my mind. So obviously, I didn't make the connection until visually I saw it. And that's exactly what I saw go through your mind as we were flipping through those bins.
Yeah, it was like a, no pun intended here, considering the villain, but it was like a lightning bolt, it just went boom, I was like, oh my God, this is what, so, and luckily the comic store had it for a very reasonable price, so I picked it up immediately. That was a great afternoon all around. So, this is Marvel Super Action, number 37. It was on sale August 18th, 1981, just 2 days away from my birthday. And for those of you too young to remember what this book was, what is Marvel Super Action? Well, Marvel in the 70s and 80s had a whole line of these reprint titles where they would pick kind of generic words, put Marvel in front of them, and then just pick a series to reprint in sequential order. And of course, this is, you know, long before trade paperbacks, long before deluxe paper, you know, deluxe paper collections. So this was a way to get a hold of old comics that, you know, as far as the newsstand reader knew, were just gone forever. There was Marvel Super Action. There was Marvel Super Heroes, which reprinted Hulk. Marvel Tales, which is, of course, was Spider-Man. Marvel Triple Action, which seemed to, I think, reprinted a lot of Fantastic Four stuff. So it was just, you know, that's Marvel had a good way of like flooding the newsstand with all these titles. And of course, they didn't even most of the time even commission a new cover. So it was all just a reprint, probably very affordable way of getting content out. And so, and you know, this particular comic reprints Avengers number 76, which is from 1970. So, you know, 1981, I would have had no way of seeing this story. So to me, it was new to me, basically. The cover is by John Buscema and Tom Palmer, and it features this as-yet-unnamed bad guy, as far as I know, at least from the cover, on top of this tower in New York City, and he's blasting the hell out of the Avengers. We see Goliath, Quicksilver, Black Panther, Vision, Iron Man, Thor, and Scarlet Witch is in his clutches. And the title, supposedly, is The Day the Earth Exploded. And one of the things I find always curious about, I loved the Marvel corner boxes. I just love that motif. They seem to be gone. Nobody does them anymore, really. But I love the idea that the Vision is the marquee character in the Avengers corner box. Not Captain America, not Iron Man, not Thor. I guess because they all had their own titles, and Vision was unique to the Avengers. But I always love that drawing of him with his arm outstretched. To me, it's like that reads to me as the Avengers of a certain period.
Yeah, I agree. It's those corner boxes, you know, Marvel, DC, whatever, it was always nice to see what they would put in there and how the art changed over time.
Yep.
The classic one is the early 80s Incredible Hulk, where Banner had the control of the Hulk, and he was dressed as the scientist and everything, and as he started losing control, that corner box changed, and he got more and more bestial as it went on until he's back to the regular rampaging Hulk.
That's such a great detail. I love that they spent the time and effort to do that. That's so cool. Such a great little extra bit of effort from the Marvel bullpen. This story said on the cover, it says The Day the Earth Exploded, but on the inside, we see that the story is actually called The Blaze of Battle, The Flames of Love, which is the title of my autobiography, and it's by Roy Thomas, John Buscema, and Tom Palmer. And this is actually a continued story. It leads in from a previous issue, which at the time I had no idea. I didn't read. But it picks up with the Avengers have built a device called the D-Machine, which they hope will allow them to bridge the gap between their world and Archon's. Ah, that's the bad guy, Archon. However, the first test proves unsuccessful, and the machine explodes, leaving the Avengers to start over from scratch, much to Quicksilver's irritation. Meanwhile, Goliath is visited by the Black Widow, who has returned from yet another mission. She explains to him that she can never see him again. While on Archon's world, the Scarlet Witch tries to convince Archon not to destroy her world, a request that he refuses to grant. He takes her into his castle's prison, where he is holding Toad and the nuclear physicist he kidnapped hostage. There, he is using a device to siphon the physicist's knowledge of nuclear power in order to build a device, the atomic sphere, to destroy the Earth, which they believe will destroy the light to Archon's world. The Avengers arrive with the added power of Iron Man and Thor on Archon's world and storm his palace, and a great battle erupts. However, the Avengers are overwhelmed, and they are unable to prevent Archon from transporting himself and the Scarlet Witch back to Earth. They appear on the Empire State Building, where Archon is about to use the atomic sphere to destroy the Earth. However, a number of Avengers arrive to stop it. During the battle, Archon is stopped when he is contacted by his advisor, who explains to him that Iron Man and Thor, who are among the Avengers who stayed behind on Archon's world, created a device that utilized Thor's thunder powers to restore the light to his world. With his world now back to normal, Archon has no desire to destroy the Earth, so he stops his rampage and bids farewell to the Avengers. Before leaving, he tells the Scarlet Witch he will not force her to marry him, and that their travels between worlds have restored her mutant abilities before he returns to his home world. So that is the story of this, what turned out to be the final issue of Marvel Super Action. Gene, what did you think of this?
I thought it was an interesting story. You can tell that John Buscema probably enjoyed doing this a little bit more, because as pretty much everyone knows, he wasn't a big fan of superheroes.
No, he was not.
And Archon gave him a chance to essentially draw a superhero comic while drawing a Conan comic. Because Archon is Conan with a weird hat, more or less. And his world, they ride animals, even though they have big, cannons and amazingly cantilevered watch platforms, which I don't know how that thing is staying up. But it was an interesting story. My main issue with it, though, is how much stuff happens off screen. For example, we open with the D Machine, obviously named in honor of D Man.
Obviously.
Black Panther and Captain America are trying to bridge the dimensional gap. Doesn't work. Cap can't find the off switch, so he just destroys the machine.
Sure, why not?
But then later on, the Avengers show up in Archon's world simply because, oh, Thor did it. We didn't see it. They just show up and there's a mention that, oh, yeah, Thor did this for us. And then the climax, you have four of the Avengers fighting Archon, who's about to destroy the world. Then the Vizier, contacts him and said, oh, yeah, don't worry about it. Everything's fine. Thor and Iron Man took care of it. I would have liked to see some of that, we have Deus Ex Comica here, almost literally, because Thor solves two of the problems.
Because comics, as a great band once said.
Yes. That being said, I like stories like this. It's a continuation, but it doesn't feel like it. A lot of stuff happened before. It's just, okay, Archon came, he stole the Scarlet Witch, threatened to destroy our Earth. Even though, they seem to vary back and forth between, is he destroying Earth? Is he destroying our dimension? What is dying here? But it still feels like you get a good beginning, middle, and end in this issue. I didn't read anything before this. I haven't read anything after it, even though I'm reading it on Marvel Unlimited, so I have access to the stuff before and after. But it's still, if I just randomly picked up this issue, I'd feel satisfied. I'd feel like I got a good story out of it. And, the art is gorgeous, so there's absolutely no complaints there.
And I've said this before on other podcasts where it's been germane to the topic. I am amazed. I mean, look, I guess I shouldn't because he was a professional. But I am just amazed at how beautiful John Buscema's work was on books like this when, as you just said, we know that he wasn't that thrilled with the material. I mean, this stuff is beautiful. I mean, Jack Kirby gets all the credit in the world for his, machinery. And he deserves it because Jack Kirby machinery is amazing. But Buscema's sci-fi machinery is also a thing of beauty. I mean, this splash page of Black Panther sitting in that chair and Captain America fiddling with the knobs, it has got crazy machine sci-fi futuristic architecture. I mean, just the visual imagination it takes to come up with this stuff is just remarkable. And this is John Buscema. Again, this is a guy, as you said, would have rather been drawing Conan. He would rather have been drawing horses and castles and magicians as opposed to this sci-fi stuff. And yet he did it so ridiculously well. And I mean, this story to me feels like the epitome of Marvel Comics because everything is at 11. Everybody's reaction is at 11. I mean, the machine explodes, and as you say, Cap can't turn it off, so he just smashes it. And he's like, I also love the Marvel trope of a character thinking to themselves, and then they finish the thought by saying it out loud.
Yeah.
Which, of course, makes you seem like a mental patient because, he's like, T'Challa is almost in an unendurable pain, but he's trying to stick it out. I can't let him die, no matter what the cost. No matter what! And then that's the part he yells. you're like, Cap, who are you talking to, And then Quicksilver gets so mad because the machine didn't work, and he's like, time, yes, Avengers, you have plenty of time, don't you? What does it matter if my sister Wanda, meanwhile, becomes the bride of the Barbarian Archon? As long as the world is saved, then there are medals left to reward the Avengers. And he storms off. You're like, dude, calm down a little bit. And you even got Vision saying, you were once a member of the Avengers, as we now regret. Which is like everybody's just pissed at each other all the time.
Yeah.
And it's just, that's Marvel Comics to me. You know, it's got all the wonderful melodrama. I love the side scene with Goliath and Black Widow. That I love that Black Widow pops into the frame by hanging upside down. Like, that's just like a great little detail. It's just like, there's just so much stuff going on, and the story is only about 20 pages. One little detail I noticed in terms of the difference between the reprint and the original comic is the original comic features two pages cut in half, where they took the top half on one page and printed presumably ads at the bottom, and then they did it another page. Here, for the reprint, they just combine it into one page. I guess because they wanted to, you know, combine it a little. I know in the page counts in the early 70s got really, really thin, but that's like the one, except for something we'll get to in a moment, that's the one real major art difference, is that they combined the half pages into one page. But other than that, it's basically the exact same book.
Yeah, and reading on Marvel Unlimited, they do the same thing. They combine those two pages right into one. So let me ask you this. I don't know if it's the digital version of it or what, but they, throughout the whole thing, they're talking about Archon having two kinds of lightning bolts. A yellow lightning bolt, which will transport him between dimensions, and a red lightning bolt, which will, essentially, that's his offensive weapon. It'll create some type of energy explosion or whatever. Out of all of the panels on all the pages, I only saw one red lightning bolt, even when he's supposedly using them or grabbing at him or whatever. Is that the same in your copy?
Yeah, that's funny. I didn't even really think about that, but you're right. Yeah, yeah. I wonder if even this reprint has been recolored a little bit. Because, yeah, he's throwing one. There's one where he throws at Vision, where it's red. And then there's a top panel where it's yellow. But that's really the only... I didn't even really notice that. They got the dialogue, but that's funny. It's not something they spend a lot of space talking about, really, or showing. It's just a little detail.
Yeah, it's just because anytime he's shown, he only has yellow lightning bolts in his quiver on his back.
Right, right,
and,
right.
You know, every time he reaches for one, it's a yellow one. It's just that one with the Vision is the only time I saw the scarlet bolts.
Yeah, it's interesting. I didn't even notice that. I do love John Buscema. He loved drawing insets of hands touching buttons.
Yes.
There's a bunch of that. There's Captain America touching a control panel, and there's the fatik sound effect, and there's one of Quicksilver doing the same thing. As someone who has had to draw some things, I know sometimes you kind of like do shortcuts a little. So I think there's a lot of that. It's like an easy way of just getting through a panel, of just having a hand, just reaching out and touching things. Of course, although Roy Thomas wrote a story of a lot of, you know, hands touching levers and things like that. But it's a really fun comic. I mean, of course, like I said, I bought it off the stands in August of 1981. I hadn't read the previous chapter, but as you said, you feel like you get a complete story. I do wonder about all the various years of comic book stories featuring really nasty, brutish guys that somehow are able to slightly charm a woman who should know better. And I always, you know, wondered, like, you know, I see a guy like Archon who's rude to Scarlet Witch, and yet she's kind of digs him a little bit. And it always made me think as a kid, as I was entering my teenagerdom, like, I'm doomed. You know, I'm just doomed. Whether it's Namor and Sue Storm or Archon, the Scarlet Witch, it's like, these guys are jerks, and yet the woman's like, well, maybe, you know, because he's the bad boy. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm never getting anywhere.
Well, I can maybe give the Scarlet Witch a little bit of a pass because, I mean, she grew up with Quicksilver.
That's a good point.
So she is kind of used to that attitude. But, yeah, I never got that. I still don't get it, really. But growing up, I would read as like, really?
Yeah, guy? Yeah.
That's who you're going for? The one that basically says, I don't care if you love me as long as you marry me.
Yeah.
What?
All he has to do is stand there passively while she recites a poem. And then, like, I guess he's kind of sensitive, you know? I love all that. And it's at the very end where, you know, she seems to be slightly mournful that Archon's going away and they're never going to meet again. Because it's the final panel is her talking about, she says, he says, Quicksilver says, what are you hiding beneath your cloak? And she's like, nothing, Pietro, nothing at all. And it's the flower that he gave her. And, you know, you're like, okay. Now, of course, not too long after this, she would become a, you know, she would get involved with the Vision and stuff. And, of course, that's something reflecting in the movies. Maybe someday we can look forward to Archon being in one of the movies. Who knows?
Hey, you never know. Yeah. But although I find it interesting that apparently this comic is the first time Scarlet Witch and Vision meet. Because on page 19, she's looking at the visions. She says, "Flee, whoever you are."
That's right. She didn't even think about that. Wow.
So, she's mourning over this weird relationship idea she had with Archon and rebounds right to the Vision, who she just met.
That's amazing. I guess what makes sense, I mean, this is only number 70. And Vision first appeared in number 57.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he wasn't around that long. That's amazing. Wow. Nice catch, Gene. That completely blew right by me. That's interesting. Cool.
Well, I spent some time this evening reading it just to make sure I was up on this. So I was trying to scrutinize as much as I could.
Very good. Very cool. That's why you're a professional. this was, as I mentioned, this is the final issue of Marvel Super Action. These books didn't have any letters pages or anything like that, and so there's no indication that this is the last issue. Books just stopped appearing. I'm certainly old enough to remember buying comics off the newsstand and feeling that pain of a book that I liked, and just, you never saw it again. You know, like unless they told you in the letters page, this is the final issue. You're just like, you know, I guess if you liked Marvel Super Action, you're just like, where's number 38? Okay, there's never going to be a number 38. This is it. This is the last thing. The one little bonus feature that this book gives you, which I actually enjoyed quite a bit, is a Avengers Hall of Fame center. Well, it's not a center spread. It's kind of an end spread, really, where it's just a little two-page profile of one of the members of the Avengers. And this one is number 3 in a series, which, of course, makes it the last in a series. And this one's on Iron Man. And it's got, the art is uncredited, and I didn't see any credits on the Mike's Amazing World or who drew it, but it's got the one page has got Tony Stark looking at some monitors, and he sees, you know, visions of him, no pun intended, talking to Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver, fighting Hulk, fighting Namor, and then there's a big pinup of him flying, and it's talking about, and it says, Iron Man became an Avenger in issue number 1. So, again, it's just a nice little, you know, way to flash back and remind people, in case you weren't familiar with who these characters were, here they are. And so I like that. I like that Marvel, again, went the extra mile to pay whatever bullpen artist they had, around to do this little bonus feature. It's kind of a nice little detail.
Yeah, I mean, it's a nice way to essentially take up what would be the letters pages in the issue. And I am glad that they showed him without the nose on the helmet. Because this issue features the helmet with the nose in it, and I never liked that look. It just I guess I'm used to the flat face of Iron Man's helmet, and just every time I see the nose, I think it's an art error.
It does look very strange. Yeah, it just looks like that doesn't look right. I mean, I think when they did it on, I think the Mego doll has it. I'm trying to remember, and it just looks
weird. Yes, it does. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just very, very odd. So, but yeah, it's a fun comic, you know? I mean, I can imagine that for 50 cents buying it off the newsstand, I must have been, you know, I must have been like, "Oh, cool. I never see this comic before. This was not a title that showed up a whole lot." I remember which newsstand that I bought it at. It's a newsstand, the same one that I bought the Captain America Battle in Blood paperback that I mentioned in the previous episode, which, as I mentioned in that episode's gallery post, that store is still there. They, of course, don't sell comics anymore because no newsstand does, but the store is still there, and I visited it when I went up to the Poconos a couple of years ago, which is actually, that was when you and I met for the first time, Gene, wasn't it? When we went over to your house, me and Shag?
Yes.
I had just gone to the Poconos at that point.
Yeah, because Shag was in town.
Right.
We all met up for dinner at the diner over by me, and then came back to my house, and you know, somehow you guys tunneled out of my basement.
And just saw through that chain. So I love that the store is still there, and again, I wish it sold comics, but it was cool just to be able to walk that floor that I spent so much time on as a kid, you know, pondering all these amazing things to buy. So it was a cool... a really cool little book. I really enjoyed it. It was fun to read these sort of classic Avengers. And there was one more detail I wanted to give about Super Action I thought you would enjoy. It started out as a Captain America reprint title, reprinting Captain America stories from his right after the book went from Tales from Suspense to Captain America. It picked up Avengers continuity with number 14, except for Marvel Super Action number 4, which is a one-off, which reprints Marvel Boy.
Nice.
What are the odds of that? I couldn't believe it when I was going through Mike's Amazing World. I'm like, wow. Like, I guess they thought maybe let's give this a shot. And maybe it didn't sell well, so they were like, all right, let's go back to Captain America and then turn it over to Avengers. But there he is. It's the one-off Marvel Boy adventure.
Nice. Well, it was before Mark Gruenwald took over. Therefore, yeah, it didn't zero in on the character just yet.
Yeah, I love all these old titles. I really do. I enjoy them. Again, in an age where everything is traded and collected, you don't need these. But I have a great affection for these, especially Marvel Superheroes, the Hulk title. I bought that like regularly because I love the Hulk. And so it was like I got two Hulks a month. You know, I got Old Hulk, which I didn't realize was Old Hulk. It was just, you know, and then I had the New Hulk book. It was great. So this was a fun book. I'm sorry to see that this was it for Marvel Super Action. This was the final issue, and then the Avengers didn't get reprinted anymore after this, at least in this form. But nevertheless, a good purchase and well worth my 50 cents. It truly is a great mountain comic. And again, I'm so lucky that I discovered it the way I did. You know, because I probably would have forgotten entirely. I don't know why my eyes glazed over it on Mike's Amazing World, but they did. But thank goodness we happened to be in that store.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing how fate works sometimes.
Absolutely. So, well, I think that is going to do it for this episode of Mountain Comics. Gene, thank you so much for coming on. I always appreciate having the chance to talk to you. Where can people find you on the internet?
Well, the easiest place to find me is at thehammerstrikes.com. That is my weekly blog where it's basically just whatever comes into my head that I want to write something about. This week I kind of go off the rails a little bit because my daughter's dance recital was this past Saturday, and people would not put their cell phones away.
Ah.
And that's a pet peeve of mine. It's just pay attention to what you're here for. But usually it's more geeky kind of topics, Star Wars, Star Trek, anime, things of that nature. If you want to hear my voice, you can find me at the Two True Freaks Network. That's TWOTRUEFREAKS. And I do a few shows over there, none of which come out regularly anymore just because of life. But you have my solo show, The Hammer Podcast. You have The Quantum Cast, where my buddy Adam Worth and I talk about Quasar, the Kevin Bacon of the Marvel Universe, formerly Marvel Boy. And Dr. Bill Robinson and I do Anime Freaks, and currently we're going through Attack on Titan and Record of Lodoss War. And if you recognize those shows, then you may want to listen, because you're our kind of people.
Very cool. And so we'll have a link to your podcast in the show notes. And for me, of course, you can find back episodes of this show, which is part of FW Presents, over on the website, which is fireandwaterpodcast.com. And since the last episode, since the one I did with Derek William Crabb, I can't help myself. I started another Twitter feed for this specific series. So you can go to Twitter and follow Mountain Comics. It's at FWP Mountain Com. Again, we'll have the link in the show notes, so you can follow the dedicated Twitter feed for Mountain Comics. I just can't help myself when it comes to creating Twitter feeds. So, yeah, I am trying to drain out the Nazis there on Twitter, one feed at a time. So, again, of course, go to fireandwaterpodcast.com and leave us comments. I really want to hear what you guys have to say about these comics. And like I did for season one, we will end the season with a big listener feedback show. So please leave comments. So again, thanks everybody for listening. Gene, thank you for stopping by. Thanks for coming by the cabin. We'll have some soda and look out over the lake and read some more comics. How's that sound?
Sounds great to me.
Very cool. Again, thanks everybody for listening, and we will see you later. Bye.